Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The roof is on fire. We don't need no water, let the motherfucker burn. Burn, motherfucker, burn!
So before we talk about you and your life.
And my boring life right now.
Can you tell, no way is it boring. Can you tell us about this amazing apartment building that we're in? Don't obviously say where, I don't want to blow up your spot.
But are you recording this?
Yeah, we're on.
This is shit.
I just go straight in, there's no warning.
Bang. Okay, bang. Do you edit this?
No, not really. Just
from
the get-go, let it roll. It's going to be great.
Right.
I like transparency and honesty.
Do I have to get this closer?
See where like I
this?
Am?
That's, oh, okay, so we're fine. Good. So this you're is good.
Right there.
Yeah, it's like holding an ice cream cone.
Exactly, and you're not as tasty. So this building is like old school Hollywood,
yeah.
And there's, I imagine, some pretty, you know, epic, iconic previous residents that have lived and sort of hung out in these corridors.
Yeah.
Such as who? Do you know any of the past guests?
Not personally.
No, because they're long dead.
Yeah, but Man Ray is one of them. I guess Frank Sinatra and Alfred Hitchcock.
That's amazing.
Apparently, also, if you want to get dark and
I
scary.
Do. Well, here's one thing I've never done, and I was reading a book in a bookstore down on Hollywood Boulevard earlier about the dark side of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And you can obviously do tours, can't you, where they tell you about the scandals and the murders and... So you're going to tell me something like that?
Kind of.
Okay.
I mean, you know, this was the last place where, what was her name? Elizabeth something, the Black Dahlia? You know, the Black Dahlia
murder?
Yeah. Yeah, that girl. She was seen here. This was the last place where she was seen before she was found dead.
I've already got
building.
Chills. I've got chills on my arms. Look, my arm hairs have actually gone up.
You know, I had to move into something kind of
dark. Gothic.
And
the room, without giving too much away, because I'm obviously in Nadia's bedroom right now, you could say.
And you shall never leave.
And she's locked the door. And
twice.
It's beautiful. I mean, you've got it's very you. You've done it out in a really kind of nice, classy way. I love the mirrors.
Thank you.
I love this guy.
Yeah. He's actually
Where'd you
near.
Get him?
He actually, he came from a friend that had passed. I'm sorry, I should not be laughing about it, but since we're talking about Black Dahlia and like
since
death,
we're on the subject of the macabre.
Oh, that was my phone. Yeah, it's from a friend that had passed, and that's just kind of, I got that longhorn
is that a phone?
Skull. Yeah, I can turn it off. It's probably this one friend that keeps texting five in a row. I always tell her to consolidate the text messages.
I do that, though.
Annoying.
I do that because my brain moves really fast, and rather than just writing one big long chunk, I do go did.
Yeah. Should I just turn it off?
Yeah, why not? Just
all right,
to be sure.
Well, then you
just
hold
be sure.
The ice
I'll hold on to that.
Here.
I thought it was a bird. Because you got the windows open, I thought you just had like a renegade bird fly in.
Texting 20 messages in a row. All right. Give me that.
So, there's all kinds of history. From Hollywood glam to macabre
to like
murder mystery.
Darkness. And I mean, some people say that this building is haunted, and I'm sure considering how old it is, there's some stuff going on, like the apartment manager that sits in the lobby downstairs. He has cameras going on, and he said, you know, some stuff has been moving, and he saw it later on camera, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I've never really, well, I had one thing in this particular room.
I've never had any ghost kind of encounter.
Yeah.
How was it?
You know, kind of freaked me out because I have this mannequin in the kitchen over there, and I used to have a top hat on it. And one time I went in the kitchen and the top hat, like, slowly was kind of dragged down the body of the mannequin and then fell on the floor. And I was like, oh, and I was kind of awkward, you know. And I used to have a painting next to the bed there. And then when I turned around, well, the painting's gone now. The painting fell down, and it's been there for years. It never fell, right? And so I was like, all right, that's weird. So I put the painting back up and tugged on it. And the minute I turned around, it fell again. And I'm like, really? And I put it up again, tugged on it, turned around, fell again. I'm like, well, obviously it doesn't want to hang tonight. So that kind of freaked me out.
Is that why you removed it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
That too.
You had to respect the spirit's wishes. Obviously not an art fan.
Yeah, the spirit didn't like that painting, apparently.
That particular one.
So far, no problems with the skulls.
Or the naked. Is that a lady?
Yeah, well, yes. that's a Dean Carr photo, actually.
Is it really?
And that was from the series of Perfect Circle.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know how he did yeah. the cover of one of their records? I believe it was their second album.
Murder Nom, is that? Or is that the first?
Yeah, this one with like a yellow worm on the lady's face.
With the song Outsider on
right,
it.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah, that's her. So that's part of that series.
Wow.
And he gave me this painting for my 30th birthday.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that's why it's hanging there. So
the first time I met you, actually, that's the perfect segue. The first time I met you was March 2013.
Really?
At Dean's birthday party.
Yeah.
Because I was in
town. He hasn't invited me since, fucker.
Has he not? No. I wasn't invited that night. Constance just invited me along, and that's how we first met, was at Dean's party. And then the last time I was in LA was 2015.
Yeah.
And I think that was his 50th.
Yeah.
And I was at that as well. And
was I there?
I don't think you were there. No.
Yeah, he didn't invite me.
It was at the bar downstairs.
From here?
Yeah, that was the only time I've been in
maybe
there.
I was not...
You weren't
in
around.
Town.
You weren't around. I think you were away, maybe on tour.
Because
I didn't see you on that trip here.
I actually was on tour 2015. Yeah. Because his birthday is like, I believe it's like February or something. And
it's
that's
always
when
March,
we started touring.
Because it's always around my birthday. Because the two times I've been out before has been for my birthday.
Yeah.
And both times I've, in fact, that last time I was out here for his birthday, that was actually my day of my birthday.
Right. Okay.
March 11th. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I'll take it back. He probably did invite me. I just wasn't here. So
because I remember saying I was at this cool bar on this street, and you're like, "That's where I live."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I live right next to a bar that I don't ever go to.
And you work in the greatest bar, but we'll talk about that in a bit. So I want to know. I want to know about your childhood and upbringing. Did you grow up in Germany?
Or for 4 years.
For four. Okay, and then you moved, your mum moved out here when you were four.
No, then I moved to Holland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's start with Germany. So you're born there, and you're there till you're four. Any memories of Germany?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was born there. I went to 1 year kindergarten, I guess. And then I moved to Holland when I was between 4 and 5. Went to 1 year kindergarten there, I believe. And, I mean, my grandmother and... that part of my family is still in Germany. So I would still always go on the weekends and visit. And so, you know, I was kind of going back and forth between Holland and Germany. But, you know.
Are both your parents German?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, they're both German and Polish. My mom is Polish and German. My dad's German. And when my mom remarried, my stepdad was Dutch, which is why we moved to Holland.
Got it.
So, and that's where I lived for 14 years in Holland. And that's where I did all of my schooling.
Amsterdam?
No, in
you
Venlo.
Wish, right?
Venlo.
I've never been there. What's that like?
It's
is it rural?
It's a smaller
is it?
City.
Okay.
Well, smaller than Amsterdam. I mean, it's in the south, you know, Limburg. It's closer to Eindhoven, Maastricht. Close to the German border, actually. You know, and small, like mid-sized town. And...
And Dutch culture for you as a kid growing up and absorbing it, did it rub off on you? What did you notice about Dutch people that makes them stand out? What I've noticed, and I've only been to Amsterdam, but in my times there, is super liberal.
Uh-huh.
And they seem really just like relaxed, easygoing, quite friendly.
Totally.
It must have been quite a nice country to be like a young kid in growing up.
Yeah. I mean, I love the Dutch, you know. I think Dutch are great people. I love the Germans too. I have a Dutch passport, you know, like growing up in Holland. I mean, I don't have any Dutch blood per se, but, you know.
It's in your heart.
I spent, all my childhood there, you know, so I do feel partially Dutch, I suppose, you know.
A little bit Dutch, a little bit German.
Yeah, I mean, I have three passports, so I feel all three countries. I feel German, Dutch, and American,
Know. Are they the same picture in all three?
No. Well, almost, very close, because I think I renewed them all around the same time. Last year.
Love it. You got to get them out later. Yeah. So what brings your mum out to, is it Los Angeles she moves to when she comes to the States? Is that the first port of call?
Yeah. Like we moved straight from Holland. Well, you know, when I stayed in Holland, I finished my high school and I went to art academy for 6 months. And then we moved here when I was 18. You know, my mom got married here, you know, so there you go.
To an American?
Yeah.
Yeah. So is that third husband?
Yeah.
Wow. So if you're 18 and you're from Europe and then you move to Los Angeles, what's that culture shock like? Was it a culture shock?
No, not at all. I've been wanting to come here since I was probably 14 years old. You know, when I was a teenager, I was a big Guns N' Roses fan at the time when Appetite for Destruction came out. So I always wanted to go to the Rainbow and, you know, do that whole Sunset Strip thing.
So you were a rock and roller from an early age.
Oh, yeah. Like my parents are rock and roll. So it's always been like that, you know. So I always wanted to come here. So for me, it was a dream come true.
And so what year are you 18 and moving to the States? What year was it?
I moved here a little prior to me being 18. I think I moved here like 17 and a half or something, you know. I think we moved here like 93, 94, something like that. So I just missed like the
right at the end
height of the Sunset Strip days, which is fine because, you know, Guns N' Roses is really the only hair metal band that I liked, you know.
So what else was your, you know, in your record collection if it wasn't?
Oh, Jesus. Back then it was, you know, Faith No More.
Okay, that's like Soundgarden, the Golden Age,
you know,
rock.
All the alternative,
yep.
Seattle stuff, Alice in Chains, you know, and I was always into, you know, like older rock stuff or punk stuff, like the Stooges and stuff like that. You know, I grew up on the Stooges and the Stones and all that good stuff.
The good shit.
Yeah. All right, well, you met my mom. She's like proper rock and roll lady.
She's amazing.
You know?
So it was her first gig over here running Jumbos. How long has she been doing that?
No, she's been doing that for a long time, but that wasn't the first gig. I mean, we, you know, when we first came here, we did just all kinds of stuff just to survive, you know?
Yeah. And so was it like, was money tight?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. We came over here with one suitcase. That was it.
Really?
Yeah.
Just the two of you in one suitcase?
No, well, two suitcases. One each.
One each. And where was your first place? Do you remember where your first like apartment was?
My first apartment was on Edinburgh or Edinburgh, however you pronounce it. I don't even know. It's by Melrose.
Yeah.
And Fairfax area. Yeah, I lived there in a little house with another Dutch friend of ours from Maastricht. And it was fun. I mean, LA was way more rock and roll than it is now. I still love it, but back then it was just so many bars and clubs and bands and, you know, and it was new, so it was nice to discover all that.
Were you going into bars and clubs? Could you get into bars and clubs?
Well, back then I had a fake ID, you know, so.
And back in those days, the basic fake ID would get you through the door, wouldn't it? Now it's kind of passport or driver's license and that's it.
Yeah.
I remember my friend Josh, when we were at school, he had like a youth club membership card with no photo that he'd just written on in biro his name and then in brackets 18 and over. And that would work in supermarkets and bars and everywhere, so he'd get all the booze for everyone.
Yeah,
good
but
times.
See, I remember I grew up in Europe, so I started going out when I was 14. You know, my mom started taking me to clubs and pubs and whatever not. And then eventually when I was about 15-16, I started going out by myself, you know, without having, you know, my mom around.
Adult
supervision. So then I came here at, you know, almost 18, and I'm like, what? I got to wait till I'm 21 to go out? I've already been going out for years, you know, from 14 to 18. So, and then I was like, oh, that's fucking lame, you know? And then, you know, here in California, everything closes at 2 a.m, so you go out early. In Europe, you know, we didn't do that back then. Like, nobody goes out before midnight.
2 a.m., isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I was like, oh, it's kind of weird, you know, and now I have to wait for 3 years. So I
So you did not wait.
No. I still I got my fake ID, and they weren't like that on top of it in those days, you know, especially at the Rainbow, they would let me in. It's like whatever, you know. And it's not like I was a drinker. It's all about selling alcohol to minors. That's really the issue. But yeah.
So you weren't going there to get drunk. You were really just there for the music and to see bands and
experience the
culture.
I like alcohol a lot more now than I did back in those days,
really?
Even though I'm not that much of a drinker still, you know.
So tell me about some of those early shows. Do any spring to mind that were really special?
I don't know. I mean, I saw so many bands back then. I don't even know what half of them. It was just the whole vibe. It was like a lot more going on. And the Coconut Teaser, English Acid, you know, I don't even remember what. Raji's was another place back in the day. Even Bortner's was cool then.
There was a bar called English Acid.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's now called... It's now called Delilah, I believe. It's on Sunset and Fairfax.
Okay.
It's now like kind of like one of those newer Hollywood bars where everything is posh and made with a theme and, you know, mixology and stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Back then it was more grungy,
dive bars, you know?
Yeah.
There's not that many dive bars left now, is there?
Nope.
I was in the Frolic Room last night.
That's one of
like,
the few.
That's like the last one standing, it seems.
Yeah. True. Frolic Room and even, what else? Jones is, it's not really a dive bar. It's more like a restaurant with a bar, but that's one of the old places too that's still cool to go to. Yeah, yeah. It's not that many. It's a few downtown. Back then there was so many, you know, and it was always great. You would always
Could you just walk down the road? Was everybody just hanging out in the streets as well? From the documentaries I've seen, it seems like the streets themselves were like, just a gathering space as well.
Especially on Sunset, the Sunset Strip around the Rainbow and then the Roxy and, you know, the whiskey and all that stuff. And, you know, lots of cars. And now it's like dead, you know. You go, there's nothing going on the weekends. It used to be packed. Even Hollywood Boulevard used to be packed. And now it's a lot of people are walking, but it's all kind of hip-hop and dance clubs, you know. Not that many rock and roll places.
Or tourists, I guess,
or
as well,
yeah.
Was it touristy then?
Yeah, but Hollywood Boulevard used to be a lot more like shady and scary, and now it's cleaned up a lot. You know, now we have big hotels, and it's just a gentrification of Hollywood.
And the world, I think. I think everywhere you go, it's the same in London. It's the same in New York,
boring.
I imagine.
I don't like it at all. I mean, look, there's good and bad that comes with everything, and there's, of course, good that comes with this too. But in general, it's like, okay, you know, the traffic is worse. The people aren't more exciting. There's definitely less shows.
And there's still a big homeless problem. So it's not like the money that's coming into the area is helping that, you know, the areas where people need help the most.
No, the homeless problem in Hollywood is really bad. I'm sure you've seen it, like there's tents everywhere. I don't remember it being like this. I mean, there's always been homeless people, but now it's just like colonies. It's like Skid Row in the middle of Hollywood. It's crazy, you know, and it's really sad that nobody's doing anything about it and helping them. And the rents are ridiculous, you know. I've been here so long that I remember all these buildings from back in the day and the rents, what they were charging. And they're charging pretty much triple the price.
I was going to say, what would it be, about double? Literally
I would
triple.
Say triple. And
in what, 20 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but the funny part is, it's not like they fixed the buildings. It's still the same shit.
Yeah.
They probably haven't even painted it since the 20 years that have gone by, you know? So it's not like they're upgrading the buildings. And it's kind of shitty that they're asking all these prices for, like, really crap apartment buildings.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's mad. And I took about an hour to get from the airport into the center of LA when I got off the flight last night.
Yeah.
The guy was like, yeah, it's going to be about an hour. I was like, an hour?
Well, that's probably you came in at a bad time.
Yeah,
right?
I came in at 5:30 p.m.
Yeah,
so,
that's the worst
bang.
Time.
Bang.
Yeah. Because, I mean, usually LAX, like 40 minutes.
Okay.
You know.
And for me, like the draw of this place, I mean, obviously the history of it is so rich, whether it's music or film. Or just art in general. But it's just, it's such a kaleidoscope of characters. And I don't know, I feel magic here. Is that what's kept you here all this time?
Yeah. No, I feel the same way. I mean, I basically, when I first landed here, I fell in love. It's just the smell of the city. Not necessarily a great smell, but it did something to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the whole energy of it. And it's, but it's also, it's not for everybody. A lot of people come to LA and they absolutely hate it, you know? And
well, it's not a relaxing place, is it? I wouldn't say you could come here and, you know, have some space and just chill. I mean, you could maybe do those things, but I feel like you have to be ready for all the kind of turbulent, chaotic frenziness that is around every corner. And
yeah,
that for me is the draw and the excitement of it is.
Yeah, I mean,
because it's full on, isn't it?
Total. Yeah, it is full on, but it really depends on you. There's so many things you can do here and so many different scenes and things you can check out. And it's really entirely up to you, you know? You could completely engage in one particular scene and then maybe you get tired of it and then you can hang out with completely different people and it's a total different lifestyle, you know? You can find everything here and that's the beauty of it. It all depends on you, what you're looking for. But whatever you're looking for, you can find it.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, I like that too.
Yeah. Whatever you're looking for, it's here.
It's
in abundance.
Yeah.
Good and bad and everything in between.
Totally. You have the beach, you have the mountains, you can drive up to Big Bear, you can get snow. It's all here, you know. I still love LA, and I always will. It's my home, you know. I feel really at home here. But, you know, sometimes I get tired of the necessarily, you know, the traffic, especially in Hollywood. Hollywood gets a little overwhelming after a while. But then I go to places like the other day, I went to Newport Beach. Like, I could never live there. You know, the valley, oh my God, no way. You know, so
because of the traffic or just because it's not necessarily you?
It's just the vibe there is to me different and, you know, it's just a bit too normal.
Yeah.
I guess I need the craziness.
Yeah. And you're right in the heart of Hollywood here.
Yeah.
Is this your favorite area, this pocket of Hollywood? Is this where you feel most at home?
It's the area most accustomed to, I guess, because I've always been in the middle of Hollywood. But no, I mean, I really love Laurel Canyon. You know, I like Atwater a lot. You know, Silver Lake is cool too. You know, Los
Feliz. Silver Lake.
You know, I used to live downtown actually back in the mid-90s. I lived downtown in a rehearsal building.
Downtown in the mid-90s. I bet that was an exciting place to be.
That was crazy. I mean, I was basically homeless for 3 months and I lived in the rehearsal building and I took showers in a blue bucket in the public bathroom there, you know? And it was kind of strange, you know, coming from Save Europe. No. Not necessarily. I just didn't have any money. So I lived in the rehearsal space.
And you didn't want to go and bother your mom?
No, she was homeless too.
Oh, okay.
We both like, you know, lost our place and like just kind of were couch surfing. And then, you know, I lived in that rehearsal building for a bit. But, you know, coming from Europe and kind of having a more safe background because you always kind of taken care of, and here it's kind of like, you know, things can happen and it's the wild west.
The scariest thing, isn't it, is you're 2 or 3 wrong moves away from that guy on the curb.
Yeah,
you know, it could happen so quickly.
It can definitely happen if you get sick or anything, but you know, that's life, I guess. But I have to say, those 3 months that I did live there, it was amazing. Like, it, you know, it was very sketchy. It's not like it's now. Downtown has cleaned up a lot. It was super sketchy. And, you know, I remember having to park the car against the wall of the rehearsal building because you didn't want anybody being able to open up the hood and steal the battery because people stole car batteries back in those days, you know. And so it was a little scary, but that's kind of what made it magical too, you know. Now you go down there and it's a bunch of hipsters.
Yeah.
It's boring. You know, a little bit of danger makes it interesting. Same as in rock and roll, you know. Rock and roll is not dangerous anymore. That's why it's boring. We have the same bands every year at all these festivals. Like, I've seen these bands like 50 times.
Yeah, even
like,
the dangerous ones aren't dangerous anymore, are they? Well, they haven't been for a long time.
Yeah.
And none of the young ones I don't find to be exciting or exhilarating in that same way anymore.
Me neither. But, you know, then I start thinking, do I just sound like an old bitter person that's just not excited about
stuff?
Well,
there is that. But then, I don't know, I just feel like you can't really say or do anything too provocative anymore without being accused of being controversial. Or do you know what I mean? I feel like careers can end overnight now because of the internet and the sort of the way that a popular opinion of a person can change so drastically and quickly over the smallest thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're not allowed to say anything. Everybody's offended by nothing.
Yeah. And everything.
And everything. Yeah. It's just like, oh, wow. Sorry, I hurt your feelings by saying something that would not have been a big deal.
Essentially, you just don't agree with. That's what it is. Yeah. People go, I don't agree with that. I'm offended. You can't say that. I was speaking to Buzz from the Melvins about this a couple of days ago, and he was like, if you claim to be liberal, but you tell other people what they can and can't say or feel or think, you're basically a fascist. There's no two ways about that.
That makes sense.
Like,
totally. It's like, if you don't agree with my opinion, then, you know, something wrong with you. I know. So, I don't know. Really, it's like a bunch of generation of a bunch of pussies right now.
Amen.
You know?
Amen.
It's so annoying.
So, are you still doing music? I can see the guitars are here.
Mm-hmm.
They're present. Are you connected to your instruments? Are you still playing? Are you excited by music as just an individual? Do you still enjoy being creative with it?
Well,
or have you lost the love for playing?
No, I love music, you know, and I will always love music. And right now I'm taking a break from music, I guess.
Is that to find the love again, or is it just because you're not in love with it at the moment, so you feel like you need a break?
No, I'm still in love with it.
Because you don't just want to go through
the motions. But I'm just not inspired right mm-hmm. now, you know? So maybe if I find some inspiration again, you know, I'll pick up the bass. The other day, actually, I did play, and I was like, oh, yeah, I still know how to do this. It never leaves me. You know, I've done this before where I would have a break of a couple of years of not playing, and then I pick it up again, and for some magical reason, I'm better than I was 2 years prior. I don't know how that works, but that's just how it is, you know? After the last tour, I haven't been very musically active, you know. Of course, if there would be something that would come my way, like somebody be needing a bass player from a band that I really like I would
do it. Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah, but they have a guy now.
Do they?
Yeah, yeah.
They can't have a guy.
Well, all of us female bass players get replaced by guys. I should be offended in this liberal movement
that
we are. It's against women.
Fucking men. White men.
Yeah.
Worse.
Taking away my job. God damn it.
What's Casey up to at the moment? Why don't you do some stuff with him?
Is he doing music?
I believe he's been making an Amen album for like the last 3 years. I don't know.
That's a long time.
I think it's because he's just been doing it like bit by bit. I believe Lombardo's played drums on a bunch of stuff. I think Ross Robinson's produced it all. I think he's been piecing it together, like, you know, over the years.
Yeah.
Just through, I guess, favors and.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the last outlaws, right?
Yeah, I mean, I saw him. I don't know, maybe 6 months ago. Or something. We ended up at a concert together, and I don't remember what he said about the record, or if he was going to Norway or Sweden or somewhere to do it. I don't know. I don't remember. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm open to playing. It's just nothing's good really been, you know, available. You know, as far as I can see, especially in metal and rock, most bands that have female players, you know, are either inactive or they already have somebody, you know? So, of course, I could play and do a Lucky Strike jam or any kind of Hollywood jam session, but honestly, I'm not interested in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really my style. I'm not really, I don't know. I don't know if I should say that, but it just doesn't sound that much fun to...
You want to be doing something exhilarating and fresh.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah, I want to, you know, I like doing stuff that I can pour my heart into.
Uh-huh.
And if I can't do it, then I don't really know why I'm doing it, you know?
It's a blessing and a curse, isn't it?
It
something
is.
Like that.
Totally.
I feel that same way. Like, I've kind of turned my back on radio because I became so disillusioned with that whole medium.
Yeah.
And part of me feels like, man, maybe I should be, because if the podcast is going well, putting myself back out there as a radio presenter again. But mm-hmm. then I'm like, fuck radio.
Yeah.
It's bullshit and it's boring. And
yeah.
I'd sooner struggle on my own. But be happy and content and fulfilled.
Yeah.
Than just jump through hoops for something that my heart's not in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I wouldn't mind collaborating with friends in music and maybe just work on a song by song basis and just put it out ourselves and just see what happens.
The album as a format is basically dead now, isn't it?
Right.
Anyway,
so people have no attention span for it.
EPs or.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a very strange time in music. Like, I feel like I don't even know what's going on, to be honest. And, you know, I did have my own band a few years ago, as you know, because you played that on one of your radio stations. And I don't really...
What happened with that?
Nothing. Nothing happened with that. It fell apart.
It exploded.
It exploded.
More like, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's fine. I mean, whatever. It was definitely a learning curve for me. And I did learn a lot from it. And I had some really magical moments with it that were worth it, you know?
I really liked the track I played.
Yeah.
Was it an EP or was it an album?
Yeah, we put out an EP. It was like four songs.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I don't really feel the need to starting like a band as far as like how we used to do it, you know, get the band together, get a rehearsal room, write the songs, play the Viper Room, and I'm over that, you know? Yeah. So
is that an age thing? Or is that just like you've been there, you've done it, and the landscape's changed?
Or maybe I just have not collaborated with people that have, you know, really...
Switched you on in that way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, maybe that's what it is, you know? And maybe I haven't really been looking either.
I was going to ask, do you put yourself out there in that way?
I haven't. I mean, here, you know, I feel like in LA, I know so many people and a lot of people know about me. And of course, if you're not out there, people kind of forget or they think that you're busy or whatever, you know? So I haven't really been looking, you know, but I mean, if something good was available, I would probably hear about it from one of my many manager friends, you know?
Because everyone in this town knows everyone, don't they?
Pretty much.
Although it's huge.
It's still a small
town. If you're in
town.
The music industry or the movie industry or whatever industry you're in, you're probably going to know most of the people in that industry and they're going to know what's going on, right?
Yeah. The thing that would be interesting for me is that I don't know anybody in the movie world. You know, I don't know anything about that craft, so to speak, you know? So for me, it would be interesting because
it's
a new challenge. Yeah. It would be challenging, yeah. So I'm thinking maybe I should look into that. It'd be definitely, I could learn something for sure. I went to one acting class about a year ago, and I was thrown into it, and I
Did
had a lot of fun.
It? Yeah,
yeah. I just thought I was going to go there to watch, but then I was thrown into it, and I had to full on do all these things with these actors that have been, you know, going to these classes forever, and. Well, you know, I'm not afraid to be on stage. You know, that's a plus, you know.
I feel like there's a lot of transferable skills between the two. I think that's why so many actors start bands and so many musicians segue into acting. It's all performance, isn't it? It's all connecting with something inside of you and showing that off in a way that connects with people.
Right, exactly. So, performing is fun to me. So I did not feel too awkward. Being
Do you
on
still
that
love
stage.
Performing then? Do you still feel...
Yeah.
Is that where it's at for you as opposed to in the studio?
Yeah. I mean, I prefer performing on stage and touring way more than being in the studio.
And you still like touring?
I love touring.
Yeah?
I would tour all year if I could.
Right, okay.
It's my favorite thing in the world.
Is it really?
Gypsy lifestyle.
Yeah, I love it. There's something, you know, just irresponsible, I guess.
Yeah. I mean,
not in a destructive way.
You don't really
way.
Have to grow up.
You can just roll into town.
Yeah,
check
your tour
out
manager,
what's
your
around.
Band dad or mom.
Well, I was doing this Q&A tour that I recently did. I was doing the actual Q&A itself. I was hosting that, and I was also tour managing as well. So that was hectic, and I was like the sensible one for once. Because usually when I'm just on a DJ tour, I can just, you know, there's minimum effort on my part. I don't really need to be that present to just play a few songs in between bands, and then the rest of the day I'm chilling and kicking it. So I saw the other side of the organization that goes into it, and I was like, oh, there's actually quite a lot of work here.
Totally. No, it's fun.
But it is so much fun, isn't it?
Well, and you know, it let's be honest, it gets boring too. You know, when we're on tour, then we complain about, oh, we want to go home. But that's just road talk, you know, because it's
because the minute you're home, you're like, oh, can we go
out
again?
Oh, of course. No, but it's just road talk. It's just like grumpy, you know, you want to have something to complain about. It doesn't mean anything, you know. But, you know, it depends what cities you're playing in. Sometimes you're like, but fuck nowhere, you know. And then, okay, well, we're across a cornfield, you know, like, what are we going to eat today? But I love it, you know. I just love being with the group and just rolling through different towns and seeing different people. And then you can go back and be like, oh, that town was pretty cool. Maybe I want to check that out in my free time, you know.
How did you find, or how do you find, being because I presume on most tours you're on, you're probably the only woman.
Mm-hmm.
Is that all right? Do you have to put up with a lot of bullshit from the guys?
No,
or
not at all.
You've always had really pleasant, positive experiences.
Well, I've had both, you know. But but I mean, I get along with guys great. You know, I like being the only girl on the tour. You know, it's fine by me. I don't have a problem. I'm kind of have somewhat of a tomboy attitude anyway, so it's not weird for me. And if there's ever any issues, I don't have any problem saying
busting
what I don't
some
like
skulls.
And telling people to fuck off. It's totally fine. So I think I have the right attitude for it. You know, I'm not like a crybaby chick that's gonna be like, oh my god, you know. That's so it's second nature to me, and I love it.
Tell me about some of your favorite early Cold Chamber tours.
Oh god, I mean, early Cold Chamber tours for me would have been,
Well, I guess right before the band broke up, right?
Well, we always break up. We break up every time. It's kind of like what we do, you know? Like, that's why when we do play, you have to come to the show, because it could be the last one. So I guess there's an element of danger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Unpredictability.
Yeah.
It's not built to
last. We do bring that.
So you joined after album three?
No. After the second
album. After the second.
No, I joined when... Now, let me think. No, I joined when Chamber Music, the second album, came out.
Right.
In 99.
Okay.
Yeah. So they did the first record came out. They did the touring for that. And then I came in early 99, right before Chamber Music dropped.
Okay. So what was the band doing at that point in time? Was it an exciting outfit to walk into, and how did you get the gig, first of all? How did that call come about? Without going into what went on with your predecessor.
How did I get the gig? It was funny, because I had seen Meegs around town at after hour parties and Bar Deluxe and places that we used to hang out in, and he was a friend or acquaintance of my then guitar player of this girl band that I was in back in the day. So I would see him around, and like, I didn't really know him, you know, but basically, you know, I knew this girl, Heather, who I used to party with and stuff, and she ended up being Meegs' girlfriend. And she called me up one day, and she goes, hey, my boyfriend is in this band and they need a girl bass player, and I've seen you play. I know you can do it, so you should do it. I'm like, all right, well, I'll check it out, you know. And so basically, Meek showed up at Jumbo's, dropped off a CD, and I checked it out. And it was different from the music I was playing back then. I mean, I was just starting out with my girl band at the time. We were playing more like, you know, rock and roll, or, you know, more like indie rock kind of stuff, you know? So this was way more metal than what I was playing. And he dropped it off, and I was like, wow, that sounds a lot more professional than what I'm doing.
So you hadn't heard of Cold Chamber?
I had not heard their music at all, because I was not into that,
in that
kind
world,
of music,
yeah.
You know, and I was not in that kind of world at all. I had heard the name.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures of them and some paper here and there, but I was not familiar with their music at all, or their live performance or anything like that. So, yeah. So he dropped it off, and I was like, yeah, cool. Then he said, well, you know, call my manager and come in for an audition, which at the time was Sharon Osbourne.
Was it really?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know who she was, you know.
Amazing.
So, I saw her at the office, which she had across the Troubadour back then on Santa Monica Boulevard. And I was like, oh, shit, that's Sharon Osbourne, you know. And it was so funny, because she was very cool to me, but I think she sized me up in 5 minutes. You know, she's like, I was like, oh, shit. Slightly intimidating back then. I was 24, you know. And then I went in for the audition, and Dez was there, and Meegs. Mikey wasn't there, because Mikey was living in Albany, New York at the time. So his brother Travis came in and was on drums, who was really cool. And so I auditioned. I was like, all right, cool, you know. And then I went in a second time, and then I didn't hear from them. And I was like, well, I actually had made plans to go to Europe. I already had bought my ticket to Europe to go see my grandmother in Germany. And I didn't hear from them for a few days. And I was like, well, I guess I didn't get it. So, you know, whatever, I'm going to go to Europe. But then I thought, well, maybe I should call Sharon and just make sure, because I'm leaving in like 3 days, you know? And I called her up and I'm like, hey, you know, I guess I didn't get the audition. It's cool. But I just wanted to make sure because I'm leaving in 3 days for Europe. And she goes, what are you talking about? You like, you got it. And I'm like, well, fucking nobody told me.
That's so like, typical of rock and roll music. Isn't
yeah,
it?
Super typical. But I didn't know at the time. I was like, oh, well, fuck, you know? And so then I had a month to prepare. I canceled my trip to Europe because I had to learn those two records, you know, to do the touring then. Yeah, so I locked myself in my room for a month to learn all the material. Because mainly it was learning the style too, because my bass playing style was different, you know, so I had to kind of learn the more metal style back then. But yeah, it was cool. I mean, I didn't have a life for like a month, you know. It's like, fuck.
I can't imagine that headspace. And it's especially when like drummers do it, mm-hmm. because drums are so personal as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you get offered a gig and they're like, okay, you've got like a week to learn everything.
Mm-hmm.
Just, it's such a mad, it's like, the only thing I can liken it to is revising for exams as a kid,
mm-hmm.
and you're just cramming and cramming and cramming and cramming.
Mm-hmm.
What's that first show like? Do you remember the first gig with Cold Chamber? Where was it?
Yeah, I remember it. It was
Did you ace it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was a little bit intimidated and shy at the time, but it was in Philadelphia at the Electric Factory. And that place is always special to me. I don't think I've played there since. I played there twice in the early days of Cold Chamber, but not on this last tour, which I would have loved to have gone back because I love that place.
You know? For obvious reasons, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it was fine, you know. It was.
Did you feel any sort of, you know, when a new member joins a band and mm-hmm. the fans go, rrr, did you have any of that at all? Or were the fans really receptive and warm to you? And
I mean,
because this is pre-internet, isn't it? So I guess you didn't have all those people that are sort of expressing their opinions online.
Yeah, I got in there just in time.
Yeah, right.
Before the internet. yeah, I mean,
you didn't have anyone sort of looking at you at the shows going boo, any of that?
No, nobody booed me out. I didn't have that really. You know, people were asking like, "Where's Reyna?" Sometimes, you know, but I had a few of those moments, but it wasn't. I don't think it was that bad, you know, because I was a different type than Reyna, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I dress different, I move different, I'm a different type. So I think, you know, we're both very individual, you know, in what we do. And so it's not like I was trying to, you know, imitate or be Reyna, you know?
Have you two ever connected? Have you ever gotten to know her?
No, which is kind of a shame, you know? I remember, I replaced her when she was pregnant, you know, yeah. And I knew it was a temporary deal. I knew once she would have the kid, she would come back. And during her pregnancy, I never met her. That's when I was doing all the touring, you know. And then she came back after she had the kid, and I went to their show, I believe for that same touring cycle, though, at the Palladium. And I just met her for like 5 minutes. And, you know, that was pretty much it, you know, like she just asked how I liked the show. And, you know, we had like a friendly 5 minute conversation and that was it. And then, I remember years later when the internet happened, mm-hmm. there was someone that created like a Nadia fan page and some of my fans were talking shit about her on my forum. Remember when the days of the forums?
The forum, yeah.
I don't even think that exists anymore. No. Nobody pays attention to that shit. Well, anyway, I had
that was for the super nerds, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that really
yeah.
wanted to get into it and express their opinions.
Yeah, totally. And I had like a web administrator person, you know, and I didn't really pay that much attention to it. And I guess some people in my forum were talking shit about her, but I didn't pay attention to it, but I got an email from her one day going like, hey, there's some people that are talking shit about me on your website, you know, like, can you take care of that? And I was like, yeah, sure, you know, like, wasn't even really aware of it. So I did that, and then she sent me an amp, you know, because she said, you know, you played this amp way more than I did, so I think you should have it, which was very nice, you know. And that's all the communication I ever had with her. You know, Very strange.
And she was just fully out, right?
Yeah, I know. I mean, she came back after she had the kid. She came back. She did like a month or so of touring for chamber music. And then she recorded Dark Days with them. But the minute she was done recording the album, she quit the band. And then I came back in and did that entire album cycle.
Was that a weird thing? You sort of dip your toe and then you go away and then you come back. Did it sort of feel like, am I in? Am I not in?
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, obviously touring for pretty much the whole chamber music album cycle lasted almost like a year for me, you know? I got used to that lifestyle and doing that, and I loved it. But I did know that she was coming back. So it was never, you know, I never had any false, you know, whatever, illusions of of her not coming back, you know. And, you know, it sucked, but, you know, it's life. That's, I accepted it, you know, and it was fine. And whatever. I mean, that wasn't too hard on me. It was harder on me when I came back for Dark Days, because at that point she was gone. She had left the band. And I was like, all right, well, now I'm back in, you know, doing these tours. And I figured, oh, cool, you know, now we're going to continue. And then when we broke up, you know, after the Dark Days cycle, that was more hard for me, because I was like, okay, well, now I'm basically in the band and now we're breaking up. Oh, that really sucks.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Because before I knew, I was just filling in for her.
Yeah, it's like,
you know? And now it's like I'm doing this.
And then
yeah.
Snatching it away.
Exactly.
And was it, I guess, just a fallout with Des and Meigs, was it? It was those two that just sort of bashed skulls and
pretty much.
Didn't they have a fight on stage or something? And then
yeah,
they just,
in Lubbock, like, Texas.
It's over. Was that the night it ended, that gig?
Yeah. Yeah. Hold on. I don't know. I got to think about it. Yeah, I think that's when it ended. Because I don't know if that was... I get the time frames confused now. But we broke up and prior to Dark Days coming out. And then we got back together because we had a Dark Days release show at the Key Club. But I think the Lubbock, Texas one is what ended it then. I believe that's what it was. Or maybe that was another fight prior. I don't remember exactly. But, yeah.
Is that hard for you in a situation like that to be... Well, were you in the middle or were you more on the outside? And do you see something like that coming? And is there anything that you feel like you can do to stop it? Or
well, I've always been on the outside of the fights, I would say. You know, I feel like I'm more... I play more of a mediator role in the band, you know, where I get along with all the guys. And,
Who could not get on with you, Nadia?
Hey, believe me, I have my moments too. I'm not as much of an angel as you might think I am. But, you know, in general, I pretty much played a mediator role between those guys, and it's worked, you know, and then sometimes it doesn't, you know. So I, you know, it's a bummer for me because I like touring and I like touring with the guys and I like playing with Cold Chamber, you know. So it's always a bummer to go home, you know. Who would want to sit at home if you can be on tour playing in front of lots of people and, you know, headbanging?
Some boring bastards in bands. Mm-hmm. It always amazes me, like, why join a band if you don't want to be out on the road playing shows? Like, when you see people on tour and they're miserable and they're like, oh, I don't want to be here. It's like,
yeah.
Well, get a different profession then, you idiot. Like, yeah. You're in the wrong trade.
Totally. Yeah. No, I mean, so that's more the thing. It sucks when you know, when shit like that happens and then it escalates and then everybody pays the price. It's not just you that goes home with a band. It's also the crew. And
of course.
I mean, the thing is, the crew will always continue with another band, so they'll always stay working, you know? That's really the ultimate
crazy
touring
world,
job to
it?
Have.
It is, right? Yeah. I know people who are tour managers, and they work all year.
Yeah.
They're just always on the road. And I think the thing with the road as well is you can kind of save money quite a lot as well, because you've got your buyouts. And
totally.
You know, you've got your rider.
Yeah.
And so if you can be smart with it, you could come home off a tour having not spent anything.
Yeah.
And then you've obviously made all your money as well.
Mm-hmm. I know. I mean, I was thinking about, hey, maybe I should tour manage because I love the road. I know the road. But, you know, then I get to hear, well, no,
would
you're
you,
not retired
would you
to
miss
play.
Not being on stage, though, as a performer? Would that, do you think, be difficult for you?
Nah, Yeah, I think no, I could handle
you think
it.
You could.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sure, why not? But it's more like, do I want to babysit
yeah.
a bunch of dudes mm-hmm. that are out of control? That's more like the thing. Isn't yeah. like, oh, God, just get it together already, you know?
Because a lot of tour managing is babysitting, isn't it?
That's all it is, really. Yeah. That's most of what it is, you know, dealing with the different characters and making sure everybody's happy. And, you know, you can't always make everybody happy. That's the problem.
Let's go back to the man, Dean Carr.
Yeah.
He has obviously made some amazing videos and done some really cool stuff over the years, having known him a long time. Was there any mm-hmm. projects with him that you were on site for or involved in?
Yeah, I mean, I did two Cypress Hill videos with him.
Really?
Yeah.
I had B-Real on this show a while back. He's the
him.
Coolest man alive,
yeah,
isn't he?
He is great.
Which two tracks did you do?
I did with Rock Superstar.
Right, yeah.
I play bass in the video.
Fuck yeah.
And What's Your Name, What's Your Number, I play bass in that video as well. So I was acting.
Love it.
See, so there's my acting career. It's happening.
What do you call it? Some roles on the old filmography.
I can just act myself.
Or just any bass, any musician, not just yourself. Yeah. That's cool. So what were those sets like? What were the shoots like?
Oh, it was fun. I mean, you know, I really...
A lot of weed?
Oh, God. No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure there was, but, you know, I don't think I was part of that particular party. But, God, it was a long time ago, but I really loved that Rock Superstar video. And I love that song. It's still a great song, you know? And I love Cypress Hill. So it was great to do that. It was fun. My outfit was a little weird.
What was it?
It was like some weird silver hot pants, and like star bra or something. I don't know. I was like, all right,
like a space age stripper.
Yeah, totally. I was a space age stripper.
There you
oh
go.
Oh my God. But yeah.
Put that on IMDb.
Yeah.
Roles I've played: space age stripper.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, it was fun doing that, you know, and then because we were like the backup girl band, you know, that was a little weird for me because I'm the real musician and the two other girls were actually actresses, you know, and I always cringe when girls play their instruments high
and you can tell girl-like. They don't play.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and there's some girls that actually do play, but they just the way they hold the instrument, it's like it looks uncomfortable.
You got to swing it down low.
Yeah, you got to own that thing.
Yeah.
You know?
I love watching you play. Like, there's just something really physical about the way you play. And I think that when I think the last time I saw you was, 2015 or 13. What was the year when you
15.
Played Wolverhampton
15.
On the Cold Chamber Tour? And I remember Des being particularly excited about that show. I was interviewing him before it and he was like, Wolverhampton to me is as important as London. And I was like, really?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah,
I come from the Midlands, so I can say that. I was like, that's a strange town to have a fondness for.
Yeah,
but he seemed really stoked on that one particular city, whether it's personal history or whatever, I don't know. But
I don't know either.
You didn't notice nerves in the camp that night then? He's like, we got to be good tonight. It's a big
well,
one.
It's kind of, I mean, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, that happens with certain shows, you know.
Yeah.
The London show was a big deal because it was sold out and, you know, we filmed the video for it that night. But yeah, I mean, Wolverhampton was cool. Yeah, what did we do?
I just saw you on the street, remember? And you were like, because I had my Jumbo's cap on and the guys were like, that guy's got a Jumbo's hat on, what the fuck? And you're like, yeah, it's my friend Matt. All I remember of that day is getting a picture of you inside a tiny little plastic bus.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That was kind of all I remember.
Yeah, and I bought like a book on some sort of health hippie shit.
Yeah.
That I'm into.
And how's that going?
But I don't know. I mean, maybe for every body type, it's something different, you know? Whatever might be good for you might is definitely not good for me, Matt.
What are you saying? Livid. Let's talk
I'm just
about
fucking with you.
Let's talk about Jumbo's then. That's the perfect segue into Jumbo's. My favorite bar in the world ever. I think it's the coolest place on earth. And I was in there with my friend Hyro, who's a rapper, the last time I was here. And we were in there and he was like, man, that's the Black Power Ranger. And I was like, what? How do you know that? And he's like, because he was like my hero as a kid. Because, you know, back then you just didn't have black guys like in the lead roles on TV. So he goes up to this dude and it was like, I imagine you get a lot of characters like that in there.
Uh-huh.
Like aging pop culture icons or celebrities just sort of sat there in Jumbo's hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of why I like it. It's just like I don't know, the decor is obviously fucked up. Like, if you've got a fear of clowns, you definitely don't want to go there, because there is just clowns everywhere. And I don't know, most, like, I DJed in a strip club in Birmingham many years ago, and I just really hated the whole experience and the vibe. And I feel like a lot of the times, well, I guess it's, would you even classify it as a strip club?
No.
It's like a burlesque.
It's like a bikini bar. Right?
Yeah. I've found
like a bikini dive bar.
It's way less, like, cringy and sleazy than most of the other places of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The music's cool. The girls seem really cool. Yeah. It just seems like a lot more of an easygoing. You're less.
It's not like a hustler kind of.
Yeah.
Typical...
Give me all your money. Give me. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. They want money too.
But... Yeah, of course, but they're not totally fleecing.
No.
So how long's your mum been running that place?
Well, she's been working there for like 25 years or something like that. 20 years.
So Courtney Love used to dance there, right?
Yeah, she did.
Was she working there when Courtney used to dance there?
No.
No.
No. Me neither. So I don't know how long Courtney was there.
Before she probably got fired.
Who knows?
Hey, that's another band I should stop trash talking of.
Yeah.
Hole.
And what about it?
Bass, you.
But they're not a band, right?
Yeah, but if they get back together.
But they got Jenny. They got Jenny V. That's Courtney's.
Who plays in Eagles of Death Metal now? Right.
Yeah, she's Courtney's girl.
Oh, okay.
So.
Well, that's that gone.
Yeah.
Back to Jumbos.
Oh, shit. Well, you know, I mean, look, what else is there? Yeah, there's not many others, right? There's Smashing Pumpkins, there's Hole. I mean, Perfect Circle used to have a girl, Paz.
Pixies. Perfect Circle have got, is it Matt Majunkins, the guy's name? He used to play in Eagles of Death Metal as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's in, there's another band that he's in with the drummer Jeff from A Perfect Circle, whose name I can't remember. They're pretty good.
Oh.
But yeah, it's few and for Pixies, but.
Yeah, well, Paz is in there, and she used to be in A Perfect Circle.
Really?
Yeah, she's great.
This seems like there's just like three or four.
Yeah, pretty much.
Exchanging members and.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's more bass player girls out there now. I probably just don't know them.
Would you ever start your own band?
Again?
Yeah.
You know, never say never, but it's not really. Well, you know what? I look at it more like I like things to just happen organically. So if I'm going to jam with some people that I really admire and respect as musicians and writers, and I get along with them and it's fine, which shouldn't be too hard to do, you know, and things are flowing and music is flowing, why not? But I feel like such things kind of develop on their own.
Yeah.
You know, I don't necessarily need to sit down and be like, all right, then, you know, I'm going to start this band. I'm going to call this person. I used to think like that. Now it's more like, you know, kind of more relaxed attitude about it. Maybe just more lazy attitude. I don't know.
Is there not a thrill about pulling together a gang and starting something that's like your own?
Sure, yeah. There is a thrill about it. And then there's also a lot of heartache that comes with that, you know? Because essentially you're married to like 3-4 people. You know? And it always starts out great. And then it always ends really bad. You know, I don't know.
I tell you what you should do.
You know what it is? It's really hard finding singers.
Is it that aren't assholes or just singers full stop?
Yeah.
a little of column A and a little of column B.
It's hard to find singers, period. You know, I mean.
That have that special quality that makes them stand out like stars.
Yes.
Front men or ladies that sort of are more than just a singer.
Yeah.
They're someone that the audience can latch onto and identify with and
totally. I mean,
live vicariously through.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that can sing, you know, but there's not a lot of people that can captivate an audience and that have that front man or front woman personality, you know? And whenever you do see it, it's great. Like, I went and saw The Darkness a couple of weeks ago. He's got it.
He's Austin Powers of the rock and roll world, isn't he? He is so larger than life and hilarious.
Yeah. And
but
he
the
doesn't
thing with
give
that
a
band
shit.
Is they're funny, but they're not a parody band. Like, they're serious musicians. Their songs
and they can
are
back
fucking
it up.
Kick-ass.
They're great players.
They're really great players.
Yeah. So, and he's, to me, it's like, you know, David Lee Roth kind of, you know, person on stage.
Mixed with Mike Myers.
Yeah, totally. But it's great. that's entertainment, you know? I don't want to, like, go to a show and see somebody moping on stage, you know, boring. So, I love the darkness.
I had a brilliant idea just then. So, years ago, Robert Trujillo did a project called Mass Mental. I don't know whether you ever heard of that.
No.
Where he basically brought in loads of different bass players.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a very bass-heavy project, mm-hmm. obviously. Mm-hmm. But you could do something like that with all those amazing women that you just mentioned. Pull together all these badass chicks and do like a fucking bass-orientated rock and roll album where you're celebrating all these amazing talents.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, actually, I thought about something like that years ago, and I was in touch with most of these bass player girls.
And Melissa Alfdemauer.
Yeah.
Or Mia. How do you say her surname?
Well, in German, it would be Alfdemauer.
Alfdemauer.
Yeah.
She's lovely. I interviewed her years ago.
Yeah, I met her too. She's great. And I did talk about this kind of an idea about 10 years ago. But, you know, with people living in different places and different time zones and schedules, it's really hard to get people together. Although now...
It's one thing the internet is good for.
Exactly. Da-da. Back then, we didn't really have that, you know? So...
Well, I think we found you a new...
Something to think about.
Project going forward. Make
or maybe
it
I should just interview all the bass player ladies that are out there and do that.
And do it as a podcast. Done.
Who knows? There's so many things that can be done. I know. No, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I'd love to be on tour again. I'd love to be on stage again. That's what I'm good at. That's what I love doing, you know? Whether that's going to happen again with Cold Chamber, I don't know. You know, I mean, who would have known that we would have put out a record 3 years ago? We thought that was never going to happen. So right now, it might look like something's never going to happen, but it can always change.
Well, Dez has just done the Outlaw Devil Driver album, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Which is, the lineup that you got together for that is amazing.
Yeah. I think that's coming out soon, isn't it?
Super soon, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I remember chatting to him years ago, like before the Cold Chamber reunion. And because when we first met, that wasn't going on, was it?
No, I don't think so.
And I guess initially, was it just like a tour idea? And then through reconnecting, did the creativity just explode? Is that how that album came about? Or was the intention always, if we are going to get back together, it has to be with the idea of doing new music so that it's not just like a retro nostalgic thing?
Yeah, I mean, we always wanted to do another record, you know, and we actually started that process in like 2009. You know, we got together, we let the past go, apologized to each other, and then, you know, we started writing, and then we had some demos. And then, you know, it didn't work out. Like, Meeks wasn't ready to really do that. He wanted to do some other band at the time. And so it didn't turn into anything, you know? And so, and then when that didn't go, I did the Vera Mesmer thing. And then all of a sudden, I was getting busy with that, you know, recording, and things were looking good for us at the time. It looked like we were getting our own deal. And that's when I got the phone call that the guys wanted to get back together and do this, you know, Australian run.
Soundwave.
Soundwave. Yeah. And that was, I believe that was 2011, I think, you know, 2000. Yeah, I think so. And so they were like, okay, you know, we got this touring going on. And for me at the time, I had a lot of stuff going on at the time. You know, for one, it was, I had my other band that looked like it was about to get signed. Then I had, you know, first of all, I didn't believe we were going to do it because we were just going to do this in 2009, 2 years prior, and that didn't turn. And I was like, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other thing is I had a health issue that I had to deal with at the time, you know, and that was really scary. And, you know, I ended up not doing that first reunion bit, you know. So, but then, you know, after they did that for, in total, they did like what? They did like a tour in Australia and then maybe a couple months tour in the States and a little bit of South America. And then they were like, all right, you know, we're going to do a record, and we got a record deal, you know. And so then I came back and did the record with them and did the touring for that.
What's your thoughts on Dez? He's a very punk rock motherfucker, isn't he?
Punk rock motherfucker.
Like, there's very few people that
he likes to wear creepers.
There's very few people in this world that I've come across like him.
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
I mean that he just, his heart's in it. mm-hmm. like really all in it.
Yeah.
Like him and Randy Blythe, I think they're kind yeah. of cut from the same cloth. There's very few people left around nowadays like that, that yeah. come from that kind of hardcore punk background, mm-hmm. obviously put that energy into metal.
Yeah.
But are just so invested 200% in the passion and the craft and mm-hmm. the lifestyle.
Yeah, he's a hard worker. I mean, he's always doing something. I got to give it to him, you know. He's definitely not slacking off. So, I mean, you know, I've known Dez for a long time. It's been like 20 years. So, you know, to me, the band, essentially, they're family, you know. We get along, we don't get along, whatever, you know, at the end of the day, they're my brothers. And that's how I will always feel about them.
How is it now? Are you all in a good spot at the moment?
I think so. I mean, we haven't talked to each other. I haven't seen any of them, you know, and that's normal for us too.
Yeah, yeah.
We sometimes don't speak for years, you know.
Do you never, I guess he's not a drinker, is he? So I doubt he's ever in bars or anything like that. So do you not really run into him?
He lives outside of town too. He lives, you know, a couple hours away.
Okay.
I mean, I know that he comes to town for, you know, probably business meetings or certain shows, you know, but I haven't seen him. You know, I haven't seen him in, my God, I probably haven't seen him since the last time we played a show together. So it's probably like almost 3 years now.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Life just goes like that, doesn't it?
The next it really
thing you
does,
know, you're like,
yeah.
What? Like, you know, I haven't
I can't
seen
believe
you in 3 years.
It's been 3 years since we put out that record. You know, it doesn't feel that long. But yeah, I haven't seen him. I see Meigs around. Have not seen him in a while, though. But him I see the most because he's closer to Hollywood and, you know, we have a lot of mutual friends. So sometimes we run into each other at like a birthday or whatever. And Mike, I haven't seen either because, you know, he's been doing family life, I guess, you know.
Were you two doing a project together for a while?
We were talking about it, you know, and that was at the very tail end of 2009 when the writing didn't work out for us with Cold Chamber. And then he and I were talking about doing something. But then that didn't turn out. And from that spawned the Vera Mesmer thing. And yeah, that's weird. Like we don't see each other when we don't play together, really. You know, when we run into each other, it's fine. But
who's your gang in Hollywood then? Who's your crew that you run around with? And
I'm more of a lone wolf.
Oh, yeah.
I gotta be honest.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I know a lot of people. I have a lot of friends, but I don't really, have a crew
like a
gang.
Circle.
Well, I do and I don't, you know,
right.
But I spend a lot of time by myself. You know, I'm definitely more of a loner person.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So I want to talk to you. A couple of nights ago, you mentioned to me about how, because we were talking about my all-time dream guests for the show.
Uh-huh.
One of them we discussed, and something's happening with regards to him. No word
as
of yet.
Crossed.
But if it comes off, then I owe you my life, Nadia.
No, you don't.
Because he's my number one guy. But I don't want to say who he is because I don't want to jinx
you it. You don't owe me anything.
For now. But my other all-time dream guest is James Osterberg, a.k.a. Iggy Pop. And I was telling you this, and you said, oh, you know I jammed with Iggy, right?
Right.
I was like, no. So I want you to tell me and all the good people listening to this about the time you got to jam with, I presume, your hero too, like all-time number one rock icon.
Oh, 100%. He is my idol for sure. I mean, I grew up on Iggy and the Stooges. So when that happened, I was, you know, kind of seemed surreal at the time. But, you know, I've been really good friends with Whitey Kirst, who was his long-time guitar player back in the day, like in the 90s, and I believe through the 2000s as well. And Whitey was actually one of the first people I met in LA at the Rainbow with my fake ID.
Okay.
You know, it was probably the first night.
He was just in there at the bar and you got talking and...
Yeah. I went in there and I met Whitey and he gave me some sort of a brain massage and I still... tell him it's because of him that my life turned out the way it turned out.
Better or worse.
Exactly. Sometimes better, sometimes worse. But so anyway, I was home from touring with Cold Chamber for a while. And, you know, usually I get kind of the tour blues when I come home.
Does that hit you hard?
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, when you're on tour, you just keep going every day. It's just, and you don't really feel it. You don't really feel exhausted because you just go, you know.
Adrenaline kicks in half an hour before the show every night.
Totally.
And then you're buzzing off the high after you get off stage.
Yep. And then you get to do the same thing again and again.
And then it's over.
And it's just kind of like a standstill. And, you know, at first it's like, oh, it's great to be home in your own bed and all that stuff. But after a couple of days, kind of like the boredom sets in and, you know, wow, I don't have a tour manager to tell me what to do. You know,
What do I do? What time do I need to be there and how do I get there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I pretty much can
fend for myself.
Yeah, I'm self-sufficient.
You're not one of these musicians that needs babysitting.
Absolutely
not. I think
not.
That's more of a guy thing anyway, right?
We're useless, aren't we? Yeah.
I said it, not you.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. But yeah, exactly. I'm self-sufficient, but you know, it's kind of boring after a while to just be home and not have that party lifestyle every day, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the tour blues sets in and you know, I usually don't touch my bass for a while. And anyway, it was one of those days I was in bed watching some nonsense television show and I got a phone call from Whitey. Was telling me that he was at the swing house jamming with some dudes and I should come down and jam with him. And, you know, I was feeling a bit depressed and I just wasn't really in the mood. So I told him, no, man, I'm like in my PJs and watching Jerry Springer. I don't know, something stupid. And I didn't go down there. And so, you know, little time passes. He calls again. Tells me again he's down there with a bunch of guys that want to jam with me. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to jam with them. I don't know who they are, whatever. Calls again. And, you know, eventually I got a phone call from some other guy. And he's telling me he's Iggy Pop's son and tour manager. And that Iggy Pop's down in the studio with Whitey and he wants to jam with me and I should come down. I thought it was a prank. You know, I'm like, well, now, you know, Whitey got these guys to call me and prank me.
He's a relentless prankster. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was
up.
Like, no, I'm in my PJs and, you know, I'm watching TV and my bass has dust on it. It's not happening.
And it literally did, right? Because it had been untouched for that long.
It's been untouched. That's a good word. Anyway, so, you know, this guy called a couple of times and I was like starting to get really kind of annoyed and bothered by this whole thing. And then finally, I get another phone call, and it was Iggy, and I recognized his voice
right away.
Now, does he introduce himself as Iggy or Jim? Or does he not say either way? I think he just said Iggy.
Yeah. This is many years ago, so don't quote me on it exactly. But I think his words were, you know, hey, Nadia, this is Iggy. I hear a lot of good things about you. I'm down here at the studio. You know, if I'd like to jam with you. If you can be down here in 15 minutes, great. If not, then fuck it. And that was it. You know,
balls in your court.
Yeah. We hung up the phone and, you know, it dawned on me that it was him. And I, you know, basically shit my pants. You know, I was like, holy fuck, that was Iggy Pop that just called me. And I better get down there, even though I don't know what the hell I'm doing. So I grabbed my my dusty bass and, you know.
Still in your pajamas.
Still in my pajamas.
Amazing.
And, I mean, I didn't have a lot of time, you know, 15 minutes.
In LA, yeah, even getting anywhere in that time is cutting it fine, isn't it?
Totally. So, yeah, so I went down there and, you know, I already heard them jamming and, you know, literally I had to run to the bathroom because I was very nervous, you know, like I love Iggy Pop and the Stooges and to play with him was a huge deal for me. But he was so great. You know, I went in there.
In the bathroom, you mean?
No, in the studio. Yeah, that was after. I went in the studio and I saw Whitey and, you know, a couple of guys that looked just like Whitey, you know, and it's like, you know, that's kind of weird. You know, everybody like looks like you're related or something. And he started laughing and those were his brothers. So it was the band of brothers, I guess.
Like the Ramones, like, yeah, that classic look.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, one brother. gave me the bass and, you know, then I ended up jamming with them for a couple of hours and it was all songs that they were just trying to write for a new album or I don't really know what they were doing. I don't really know what I was doing, you know, but Iggy was really, really cool. Like
when he's practicing, is he shimmering around like a snake like he does on stage when he plays live? Like what's practice room Iggy like?
Practice room Iggy. Well, I mean, he was moving a little bit, but he wasn't, you know, going crazy and, you know, putting peanut butter on himself. And I mean, he, you know, crawling around on the floor, that did not happen. No, he was, you know, pretty composed. He was singing. He was moving a bit. He was feeling certain parts, just, you know, how it is in a rehearsal room, I guess. But yeah, so, you know, we jammed for a couple of hours and then I went home and, you know, I felt great that I was in that situation, but at the same time, I was like, fuck, I didn't know any of these songs, you know, because they were just jamming. And I, you know, called Whitey and told him he should have told me, like, what those songs. He's like, I was trying to get you to come down here for hours. You were just being, you know, playing hard to get. So anyway, I ended up not playing with him after that. I ran into him on the street. You know, he asked me if I was practicing.
Iggy did.
Yeah. I wasn't going to lie to Iggy Pop, you know, so I said, no, I'm still in bed with my PJs.
Watching Seinfeld
or Springer. TV. And that was it. I haven't seen him since, you know, but it was really cool, unexpected experience. And
a life highlight for you?
Absolutely. Like definitely a dream come true, you know, and he was so cool. And I never wanted to meet him before because I had the chance of meeting him prior at shows where Whitey would be like, come backstage, you know, and I was like, nope, because if the guy is a dick, I can never listen to the music the same way. So I just don't even want to meet him. But I did, and he was, you know, totally the real deal.
He's authentic, isn't he? He bleeds authenticity. I met him once for about 2 seconds, and he thought I was in a band. I was in like a stairwell at an Eagles of Death Metal show. Mm-hmm. And he goes, hey, sorry, man. I didn't mean to interrupt you before you're going on stage, man. Like, so cool. And Josh Homme just pushed me to the side and was like, don't worry about him. He's not in a band. Like, just totally mugged me off. But Iggy was, he just seemed like the perfect gentleman.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, he's the real deal, not just in music, but also in person. And, I mean, if you're Iggy Pop, you don't have anything to prove, you know?
No.
And
I think that's the same with anyone of a certain stature, is there's no ego there because they've achieved everything they set out to achieve a long time ago, their legacy is cemented forever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no sense of, I need to prove myself here. Yeah.
I mean, look, there's still some people out there that are very known, that are idols, that, you know, huge rock stars or pop stars or whatever, and they're total dickheads. You know?
Like who?
There's a list. There's a long list. And, you know, that's, you know, unfortunate, because why?
Yeah,
you
you've done it. You've conquered the world. Like, revel in that and appreciate
that. But even if
you
haven't conquered the world and you're still trying to get to that point, there's no reason to be a dickhead, you know?
No. Simple,
isn't
it?
In my opinion.
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick. It's simple. Okay, well, let's wrap it up by discussing, we mentioned earlier on about this idea for a new podcast for you.
Yeah.
And what I think we should do in a minute is go and sit down and brainstorm some ideas for this podcast, because I think that there is a lot of potential there.
Yeah.
Is it something that you think is going to interest you? Are you going to grab this bull by the horns and run with it?
Yeah, I think I will. And I mean, thanks to you, because us sitting here prior and talking about stuff that inspired me to give this a shot, you know. But yeah, I'm definitely... with you, you know, thanks for your help and inspiring me to even come up with this idea.
I think it's the greatest thing you can do for your friend is to show them the way when perhaps they didn't really know what was going to happen next, where they were going to go.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you feel good about it.
And I do appreciate that a lot, Matt. I really do.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Well, that can be my return favor if the other guy comes through.
Yeah, and then, you know what? I mean,
then we've done a great thing for each other.
We're just going to have to keep paying it forward, you know?
Right, and become podcast buddies.
Yeah, exactly. I'm excited about it. We'll see what happens with it. But I think, you know, hopefully within the next few weeks, I'll have something at least. Maybe not on air yet, but recorded and ready to go. And then launch it.
Launch that rocket to Mars.
Thought we were going to talk about...
What do you want to talk... Oh, no, God, yeah, the most... So this... Anyone who listens to this podcast within the UK will know about one of the most iconic Reading Festival. Just legendary stories about Daphne and Celeste, who are like a cheesy pop duo. And it's interesting because now Reading Festival has gone a lot more pop and a lot more R&B. But back in the day, it was completely rock. And if an artist, even 50 Cent played there... Mm-hmm. In the early noughties, and he was bottled as
really?
Well. Yeah, people were absolutely livid that he was on the bill. But prior to that, Daphne and Celeste, I mean, the poor girls, they were booked to play. And I wasn't there, but I've just heard the stories passed down. It's like a legendary tale that's done the rounds for many years. You were there, actually.
I was there.
Not only at the festival on site, but you were like right on the stage, right? Or behind the stage.
Yeah, yeah. Behind the stage, backstage, or whatever the side thingy is, there where people stand to watch the bands from behind. And it was crazy. They didn't last very long. Just you said three songs?
I think three songs, maybe less.
Yeah, it was crazy. The stage was just full of shoes, cans, like mainly, I think, mud. You know?
And who were you watching it with? Who were you watching this disaster unfold with?
Well, I was there with the Slipknot guys, so maybe with one of them or one of the crew members. And
what did they make of it?
Well, I mean, I'm sorry, but we were all kind of laughing because it was so crazy that, you know, these poor girls were...
And were they crying?
I don't remember. I don't
heard they were pretty distraught, because I don't think they had any inclination as to what they were going out into.
Yeah.
And whoever booked them, I think, is responsible for
absolutely
the shit that they got, because that is a misbooking and a half.
Yeah, but who would put this pop duo in between a bunch of metal and rock bands on a major...
Was that main stage? Yeah.
Wow. That was crazy. Yeah. So, I mean, I've never seen anything like it, you know? I was just like, wow, you know, I hope... If I ever played his main stage, they're not going to throw the mud at me, because I'll throw it back. And there's no doubt about it. I will freak out.
What's the worst thing that's ever happened to you on stage? Have you ever had anything even remotely like that?
Obviously,
I imagine it's part and parcel of gigs over the years to get the odd thing thrown up. But have you ever had any like real hairy situations where you thought, oh, this could go really bad?
I've had one when we played at Harpo's in Detroit. It's a very high stage, like super high. And at one point, some kid was trying to climb up on stage and did, and then one of the crew people threw the kid off, and when the kid was thrown off the stage, he grabbed me by the leg. And I almost fell down with him into the pit, and it's I don't know how many feet it is, but it's really high, you know? And so luckily I didn't go down, but it was kind of like a struggle there for a minute to stay on stage. So that would be one of those things, you know, I didn't really have things thrown at me, like maybe some beer at some point, you know? And then, of course, you
seem disappointed by that.
yeah, throw me money. I don't know.
No one loves me. I've never had any cans thrown at me.
Money or chocolate, you know, I'll be happy. But
as long as it is definitely chocolate and not shit.
Yeah, no way. No, and then you have the occasional guy that's, you know, trying to stick his tongue out and make sexual, you know, whatever.
You get a lot of that, or did you used to get a lot of that back in the sort of more misogynistic 90s?
You know what? I didn't get a lot of that. I got it a couple of times. And, you know, I usually always dared the guy to come on stage and just do it on stage in front of my face. Yeah, I was like, come up here. Come and do it, you know, because, you know, I'll probably hit you over the head with my bass.
I wouldn't fuck with you.
I wouldn't either. And I actually now comes to mind, there's one time we had a little bit of an attack, okay, so to speak, on stage. That must have been, I think it was in Kansas City. What happened is we had come through there on a prior tour and weren't able to play the show because the power was out or something, or they had bad power. And I think by the promoter using that power, he blew up one of Meigs's pedal boards. And, you know, the pedal boards for Meigs' sound is very important because I don't use anything. I go direct. Like, there's nothing on my bass, no pedals whatsoever. But, you know, Meigs has all those sounds, and they're an intricate part of the Cold Chamber sound. So this guy blew out his entire, you know, soundboard or whatever, pedal board, what he had. And so we didn't end up playing the show. And then the promoter went up on stage and talked a bunch of shit, like, this band sucks because they're not going to play the show. And I think Meigs
threw you under the bus, basically.
Yeah, and then I think Meigs threw the guy into the barricades.
Amazing.
In front of everybody. But anyway, so we ended up not playing that show. The promoter's buddies ended up slashing the tires of our bus, and we were stuck there for the night, and you know, looked like they were trying to beat us up or something like that. And we ended up getting a new bus and getting out of there. But so months down the road, we had to make up for that show. And we went there and we played the show. And then some guy or a couple of guys came with the fire extinguishers and kind of blew those in our faces while we were playing. And the entire stage was, you know, just under fog and whatever not. And we couldn't breathe. So we had to like end the show because they attacked us with fire extinguishers. It sounds so silly, but, you know, yeah, and the fire department came. They had to check us out. And I'm not sure if we went back on stage or not. But yeah, Dez wasn't breathing great, I think. I know. What a weird way to, you know,
express your appreciation or opposite of.
I guess we still didn't play that show in Kansas City. And I actually don't remember if we did it on the last run.
I guess if it's still the same promoter, you probably ain't getting invited back either.
I honestly, I kind of doubt it is because that was like 20 years ago, right, you know, like when that original thing happened. Those were the days.
We spoke earlier on in the conversation about how danger's gone out of rock and roll now. I think it's obviously gone out of the live shows to a large extent as well because of, and it's maybe a good thing on the one hand because you perhaps don't have stuff like that happening as much anymore, but then I feel like with all the red tape there is now at venues and all the health and safety rules, the shows aren't as fun.
Right. But I think that depends a lot on the bands as well, you know? I think there's, you know, more security, but maybe sometimes not enough security still, you know, for shows. But go ahead. What were you saying?
That was it, really. I think the danger has gone out of live music because so many people are filming the shows and trying to capture footage to put on Instagram. They're not in the moment, they're not moshing, they're not crowd surfing, they're not tearing fucking
chairs, I still
out
see
the
some
floor and things off the wall.
I still see some moshing and you know, some attempted stage diving or mm-hmm. whatever. But in general, yeah, I do think people are way more on the phone and filming stuff instead of being in the moment and enjoying it. You know, good news is there's always somebody that will film it. So, you know, if you do want to freak out on stage or, I mean, off stage in the crowd, go ahead, because somebody's going to put it on YouTube anyway, you know. But yeah, I think it's mainly the bands aren't dangerous anymore. You know, it's pretty. But then again, I don't know. I haven't seen many crazy bands lately, so maybe I'm just out of the loop.
Casey needs to get back on stage, didn't he?
Yeah.
Do you think he'd still go as, obviously maybe not as nuts, but do you think he'd still be?
I think so.
Going pretty fucking wild.
I don't think he can help himself.
I haven't seen him live for, God, I mean, it must be.
I hope he still would.
It's over,
you know?
10 years, but you would hope, right? Because he used to do this thing, I'll never forget it. He'd put out his arms like a kind of Jesus mm-hmm. Christ pose, and then he'd just fall back. Mm-hmm. And obviously your natural reaction when you do that is to put your hands down to break your fall and to stop yourself getting hurt.
Sure.
But he'd somehow overcome that, like, mm. what you call, like, knee-jerk reaction of the brain, and he'd just collapse all the way down like that and just fuck himself up, like mayhem.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he'd stand like that and then just fall all the way down and just be like,
yeah, yeah.
It's one of the craziest things I've ever seen, just because I'm like, how do you train your brain to not break your fall?
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
No.
I'd be scared. I'll leave that up to Casey. I don't know if he's still going to do that.
I'm seeing him on Wednesday, so I'll ask him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Nadia, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you.
I look forward to the as yet untitled Nadia podcast, and good luck with it.
Thank you.
And definitely make it happen and get on it, and I think that a lot of great things will come out of it. It's going to be
awesome.
Good.
Okay.
Cheers.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.